Hey, grandkids. Welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 40. As I have just learned that I incorrectly introduced last week's show, and there was a torrent of people telling me that I am an idiot and I cannot count to 39, in fact, which was is now correctly labeled on our site, but is still incorrectly introduced.
Well,
as you just well demonstrated to me on iTunes.
Yeah, I mean, do we remember what we talked about last week? Wasn't it,
it was Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's listen here.
He did, but again, like,
this is, we're listening back to the tape.
As an overall whole, if you're gonna do that, I don't understand why you don't stick with it. Like, it makes no sense.
That's a mystery what you're talking about at this point.
He seemed to be living up to the hype. Like, why try and kill that?
I don't think we're talking about Ghostbusters.
He is as good as you think he is.
Yeah, I feel like we might have posted the wrong episode. Oh, no, that was... All right, it's my turn to be an idiot.
Oh, 84. I'm sorry, was that the
All right.
This
is actually the right show here.
Go with my, what I was saying there.
Well,
there was
and...
a cartoon called Ghostbusters.
Okay, so you know what? We did it okay last week.
Yeah, I just introduced the show wrong. That's all I did. I did not attach the wrong file.
Sorry, everybody. I just had to,
Even labeled it correctly. What started this problem, actually, was the fact that I labeled it correctly in the file name itself was 39. So, I just introduced it wrong and then put it in the post as 38.
Right. So, for some reason, you were thinking 38 last week.
Yeah.
But today is something of a milestone, I suppose. We're over the hill at this point with our podcast.
We
up
are
to episode 40.
Episode XL.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. If you want to go Roman numerals.
Yes, yes.
I know
we were talking about that beforehand, too.
We mostly go with the Arabic numerals these days. But
yeah, since Ken's a terrorist, he's going to point out that we use Arabic numerals.
That's right. I don't know why you didn't ask me why I hate America. I think that reflects badly on you.
Well, now you're a little bit suspect. I called you a terrorist.
Okay, there you go.
I mean, that covers it.
That does imply it, that I hate America, I guess.
Yeah. I guess I could ask for specifics, but why worry about it? If you just hate...
No, keep that brush as broad as you can, I say.
Yep. Player's gonna hate. Hey, if they're gonna kill innocent people, you know what? That innocent person may not, in fact, be part of the coalition of people you dislike.
Well, that's true. But what if you're going to achieve your objectives regardless of who it is that you're killing? And... Welcome back to International Terrorism Cast.
Yeah, rollicking start.
So
yeah, I don't really know
we just wanted
about
to,
that stuff to really go too deep.
We just wanted to hurry in and really, we realized Kevin's mistake, and we just wanted to rush in there and make sure we exploited it and let everybody know about it.
Yeah, well, one person was... accused of exploiting, and his name would be Richard Branson occasionally.
Yeah, that's a smooth transition. We're off. That's a for a first transition. That's pretty damn good. We're gonna have a high bar to cross here this episode.
I'm gonna try to smooth things out from now on going forward.
Richard Branson has a kind of a. What would you say, billionaire playboy kind of thing?
Definitely. When you own your own islands and have your own jet company, your own music company, and a couple of failed ventures. But you know what? I do think in general, anyone that makes money has some failed ventures under their belt.
You know what? You're right, I think. You got to make mistakes in order to learn. That's how it works.
Yep.
But... So Richard Branson, though, I think with his image, he's probably a lot of people have a problem with him or not necessarily think he's a great guy. And they're maybe happy to see things go wrong for him. a little bit.
Right. And honestly, after reading this article, I have a hard time, at least in this instance, of the bad things that happened in any way reflecting on him, like, or saying good, I'm glad that happened to him. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about fatalities, I hope you don't get into that kind of a game, even with as much of an ass, maybe, as you view him.
Yes.
Or as one and might view him.
I guess, you know, people might know some of his companies as Virgin Records, Virgin Airlines. Was there also, like, Virgin... there were some of the failed ventures, too. I think it was, like, Virgin Wives was one of them?
Yeah, Virgin Wives was one of them.
Which I have no idea what that is, but...
Yeah, I did not have the time to look into that.
It apparently did not work out well. I mean, that's a pretty good name, I guess. If you're already kind of, like, going with the whole Virgin thing.
Right. You know, that seems like territory that you're going to get tread on.
Yeah. You might as well hit the Virgin Wives.
Oh, Virgin Cola and Virgin Racing also.
Did not do well for him, so.
No.
But he still is doing okay, I think. And right now, he's kind of big into starting up this idea of Virgin Galactic.
Well, and it's not even a now. This is one of those things that when I was reading this article, I'm like, oh, son of a bitch, that was 10 years ago? Because I do remember the contest to have a flight that, you know, brought about the promise, really, to have human flight through commercial means.
Into outer space.
Yeah, into outer space.
Or quote-unquote outer space. Like, this is, I guess, it is kind of subjective in some ways because the atmosphere thins out for a while. But this takes you, you know what, if we did more research, this show would be so improved.
But, well, it was the Karman line, if that's the correct way to pronunciate it. It's K-A-R-M-A-N. But it has a tilde, or not a tilde, it has some type of...
an umlaut?
No, it's not an umlaut, it's just a single slash above the A.
Oh, like an accent mark?
Yeah, it's an accent mark, so I could be pronouncing it wrong. But it's several miles, or it's at least twice the height of what a normal aircraft flies at.
Okay, 100 kilometers high.
Yeah, okay.
So that is near vacuum conditions where space is somewhat arbitrarily said to begin, if I'm quoting from the article, which I am. Spoiler alert. So that's pretty high up, though. You don't, I mean, that's way higher, like you said, than a commercial jet would fly.
Right.
So to get up there, you just can't take like a regular plane, it turns out. So I didn't realize this before reading the article. It's actually a two-stage device or vehicle that gets them up there.
Yeah, I wasn't too surprised by that since really NASA has a two-stage vehicle. So it's not surprising that would work because then, yeah, you're jettisoning off a lot of weight at some juncture. Like, you need that initial mass and speed
just to get out of the early part of the atmosphere,
right,
where things are kind of the hardest to get elevation in a way, because at a certain point there's less wind resistance, you know, obviously once they get up there,
right? So yeah, you can drop the weight and use less fuel to kind of get to your objective.
So there's like a giant plane basically, and I would encourage everybody to read this article. It is just
it is quite long.
We
definitely cannot cover the entirety of it, or we would be here all show.
Right.
So,
yeah, this one is in Vanity Fair by William Languish. I don't know. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but go ahead and look at it. You know, look it up yourself and see how you think it should be pronounced. But he kind of like seems like he was granted some pretty good access to be able to write this story.
Yes, it was very detailed, 'cause they were even talking about how because they went into... the storytelling was kind of interesting, too, because the guy that founded the company that designed, what was it, XPRIZE, I believe, was the name of the contest.
Yes, the one who, the gentleman whose company won the XPRIZE to get a civilian spacecraft going, right?
Yeah, he was mentioned at the beginning of the article, but then he really doesn't come into play until later in the article when they start to explain his backstory, because at this juncture, he isn't involved in the project and hasn't been for years.
Sure, he sort of, well, won that XPRIZE, and then kind of, it seems like at some point, handed off the baton and let others carry on with this project.
Yeah, his underlings, essentially, were the ones that carried along with it. As you might imagine, not a whole lot of people that know about this stuff. Now, strangely enough, I do know one person that worked on NASA projects and was involved in that. They actually worked for Lockheed Martin, and at the time they did. They don't work for him now. But he was really a rocket scientist.
Yeah, I was tempted to say that this isn't rocket science, but it actually is rocket science. So
yeah,
I couldn't say that
by a long shot. and this is pretty crazy that I don't even know if I want to do this. They're talking about this. The plane's going to be a 6-seater, is what they're imagining: 2 pilots, and then 6 passengers.
Yeah, so it's not. You know, well, they're flying you up there partway on a big jet that is kind of like a repurposed commercial jet, it sounded like, or at least based on a commercial jet, but bigger. And that's what your smaller actual spacecraft, I suppose you'd say, is launched from. Which,
right.
I guess would have to have a separate pilot there, or 2 pilots, it sounds like. So there's 2 pilots and then 6 passengers who, shall we describe, we can describe a little bit, I guess, of the trip that you would have if you were to do this.
Well, you're only weightless for a very short amount of time.
A few minutes, I think. Yeah, maybe like 10 minutes?
10 minutes, I believe, yeah.
Yeah. So, and the part that killed me was you start, I mean, this sounds like you have to be at least cool with, like, some pretty crazy roller coasters before you would want to try this.
Yeah, as much as I love roller coasters, I'm not sure I want to do this. Like, they're talking over six...
It was, like, at least 5 Gs at one point. Or, like, during the... Yeah.
Re-entry.
Oh,
yeah. And it was Mach 1.4 at one juncture.
So... 5 Gs, I mean, that doesn't sound like a whole lot, right? Just a handful of Gs. But that is like 5 times what the Earth's gravity is, you know? So, like, if you weigh 200 pounds, that would mean you'd feel like you weighed the equivalent of 1,000 pounds, half a ton. So, that would not be comfortable, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, it just seems like a bad idea to just, because I don't know how they planned on working this. But it sounds like a terrible idea to just have people get on without any type of training. Like, I know that the astronauts go through quite a bit of training before going up.
Right. Now, to be fair, the astronauts, and you know I love to be fair, but the astronauts are actually piloting the thing. So, like, they have to have a lot more training, I would think. The passengers are just going to sit there.
Yeah, but just to be used to that feeling, I would think that you'd need to build up to that.
True.
Or, I just think that vomiting would be a very easy thing to do.
I would think just for, like, liability reasons, they would have to do some kind of, test, you know, health test at least, before they would let somebody go up in this thing. Because that's, you know, you don't want... They always say, like, when you're going to ride a roller coaster, you know, if you have a heart condition or whatever, you're not allowed to, yeah. Or you're pregnant, whatever, back problems, etc. Under 48 inches.
Do not do this.
Yeah, I'm sure there's certain rules that they have. You must be at least this high to go into space, I think, is what I'm trying to say. But, yeah, after you come down, you get to have, like, a cool hangar party with...
Richard Branson.
With Branson, yeah. So it sounded, you know, well, they described it as a raucous party. So I don't know.
Yeah, but in general, though, this article, to me, brings into question whether Mr. Branson will be around when this is ready to happen.
Yeah, they might have to, like, bring him in preserved in a glass coffin or something if they want to continue to honor the terms of this, what you get for your ticket. But,
your $250,000 ticket.
Oh, yeah, we forgot to mention that. $250,000.
Yeah, some people did pay for that ticket already.
Wow.
And again, it's been 10 years and they haven't, you know, gotten anything together. And one of the more recent ones, the pilots died. Now, it does seem as though it was from a pilot error.
Yeah, so at first, the plane ended up basically blowing all apart.
Well,
when they were going up on the ascent, I think, was this
yes.
when this happened? Which, by the way, if we can talk about the ascent, because I think you're under, like, 3 Gs going up there.
Right.
So it's like... Once those rockets take off, like, you're going to be only weighing 600 pounds, but it's going to be pretty intense, I would say.
One would imagine.
For however long they go. But then once you get up to a certain height, they totally shut off. So you go from 3 Gs to 0 Gs with nothing in between, which...
It's got to be
a recipe to make me hurl, I'm thinking.
That seems like an abrupt stop.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a stop, but it's got to be like a huge difference of feeling for your body, I would say.
I guess stop isn't right. A huge deceleration.
But, no, again, it's not a huge deceleration, I don't think, because you're feeling that the force of the G force there, because you're accelerating, more and more and more when the rockets are firing. So that's like pushing you back in your seat.
Right.
And so then once that acceleration stops, you're moving at the same speed then, but it's just like, you're not even moving. It's like when you're,
oh, driving.
Yeah. So
flying.
Yeah. Except you're completely, weightless. Because you're falling, really, is why you're weightless.
Yeah, and that's pretty crazy, really. Just to be falling for that amount of... Because I don't know how long a normal parachute jump would last. But I don't think it's very long. I do...
Yeah, probably a few minutes, I would say. Which, I guess you're going to be weightless for a similar amount of time, it seems, by... Except you're spending $250,000 to do it. Although technically you're in space. So I would think that the view would look pretty cool up there for a little bit too. Like,
oh yeah, that would be pretty wild.
You'd be able to see stars and things.
Yeah.
Before you come back down again. So, I mean, it would be cool. I would say if you're going to buy a ticket, like, don't pull all your money just to buy this ticket. Like, you want to make sure you got... A couple mil in the bank, I would say, before you go ahead and take this plunge.
You're not booking your ticket yet?
I'm not, no. None of my credit cards have a $250,000 limit on them, so I will not be purchasing this ticket, unfortunately.
Okay. So depending upon where you free fall, depends upon your exit altitude...
And your attitude, I should say.
From 9,000 feet, it's about 30 seconds. From 13,000 feet, it's about 60 seconds. From 18,000 feet, it's about 90 seconds.
Okay.
So
18,000, that's like half the altitude that a commercial jet would fly at, I think, I want to say, because they were around 30, 35,000 maybe.
Yeah, I believe it was 32 was what they cited.
So people normally don't jump from there.
Right.
But, yeah, you'd be going much higher than this, so you're going to be falling for quite a while longer than that, I would say. Yeah, so several minutes at least.
Yeah, and it says, oh, okay, parachute will be deployed around 5,000 feet, so you have another 4 to 5 minutes before you land.
Yeah, that's one thing so I've never done, is try to go skydiving.
It is, my younger brother Brian invited me. Him and his wife went for her 30th birthday party.
Oh, that's fun.
They got to tell one person each that they were doing it because they knew the parents would freak out if they told them ahead of time.
Yeah.
So Brian told me and Becky told her older sister.
Well, that would be kind of fun, I would say. But
yeah, I didn't go. I believe I had to work, and I was severely in debt and needed the extra hours, I believe, at that juncture of my life. So,
and probably did not need the expense of skydiving.
Right,
either.
To compound said debt problem.
Yes. You weren't buying that $250,000 ticket either at this point. So.
No. I have recovered from that that low point. But I am not ready to buy a $250,000 ticket.
Sure. I'm like I said, you want a couple of mil in the bank before you're going to pull the trigger on that.
And I'm not even sure I really want to do that.
Even if you had the money, you don't think you would do it?
I don't know if I'd do that, even if I had the money. That seems pretty crazy to me.
Well,
I'm one that would want to go swim, be in a shark cage.
Yeah.
But
no,
I'm
that
not
seems kind of dangerous, too. I mean, what appeals to you about going in the shark cage?
I guess I like it more because the sharks are just kind of cool and interesting. And,
I mean, going into space is kind of cool and interesting, if you're going to be technical about it.
Yeah, I guess maybe I still get a little worried every time a plane takes off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once you get to the cruising altitude,
Oh, well, this is going to be, like,
down. So, yeah, I guess
this is going to be that times 10, I would say, for
right.
You.
So, since I don't like a commercial jet plane, I'm not completely sure that this is an activity for me. Like, I don't mind. Like, I'd love to do a skydiving or even base jumping, something, you know. Those kind of things, I would be up for that, but for some reason, the actual flight up there just does not appeal to me.
Well, yeah, I guess you would still have the bad takeoff when you're going to be skydiving, but, you
right.
know, see, I'm really afraid of heights, so I'm probably not the guy to be talking about this anyway, but for some reason, like, I feel like if you're in a plane, it's almost, and you have a parachute on, like, it's not going to feel like you're, you know, looking over the edge of a rooftop or something, like...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
And that's it. It's one of those things to me where I guess I don't particularly like heights. Like, when I was, cleaning off the aforementioned brother's gutters this past summer.
Your brother's gutters.
Yep. I was a little concerned, and I was just up on a roof. But I'm okay with going on, like, that 400-some-odd-foot roller coaster.
Right, because I would say you're probably safer on the roller coaster because you're strapped in and all that. And I guess it's a similar thing when you're flying or when you're parachuting, I would say.
Yeah, there is at least the illusion of safety.
Yeah,
everything should work. I would imagine that if it didn't work, there wouldn't be this many people doing it. Things screw up. It happens. People screw up.
Yeah.
Which really was the case in this one flight.
Right.
You know, sometimes...
When the plane fell apart, or kind of looked like it exploded, people thought that there was a mechanical problem with the engine or with the fuel tanks, but when they reviewed all the data, it turned out to be that the co-pilot, I think it was, reached down and pulled the lever to change the way that their... Flaps work. What was it, the flaps or was it the whole tail?
They called it two-feathered.
Okay.
Or a feathered landing.
Because the tail, like, flips up, it seemed like, right?
Yeah, it flips up. It goes perpendicular. It stays with the wings, but then and it's locked into place. But then they unlock it on the descent so that they don't burn up.
It slows them down, and it lets. And I think it also positions the plane so it's hitting bottom down. That way, it kind of slows it down more, and there's less. The heat is like distributed more, so it's not going to burn up the plane as much, which is good, I think.
Yeah, and I found that kind of interesting that it was easier to distribute the heat rather than having like a cone at the front, like. Absorb all the heat.
Right, and I guess that's what I was thinking too. Yeah, like it would make sense to, concentrate it all in one spot so that you could, like, really build that up. But I guess that's maybe just asking for it in a way. Like, if you can spread it out more, then you're going to be safer, which makes sense.
Right, yeah. After hearing the idea, I'm like, this is the reason I'm not a rocket scientist.
That's why it's hard, you know? It's people use it as an example for a reason, I guess. You know, you've got to know what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, and as noted, and that was the other crazy thing about the explosion is that the pilot lived. He was unconscious for a while, but then when he came back into the atmosphere, he could breathe again. And
this was the co-pilot, I think, the one who made the error. So he pulled that lever to flip up the tail when they were on the ascent, so that caused like all these huge drag forces and it just basically tore everything all to pieces. But he was thrown clear and was able to through
a hole in the in the ship,
right? Because it was, you know, breaking him to pieces. So yeah, there was no more ship, but he was lucky enough not to get hit by anything, I guess, when he was flying out of there.
Right.
So he was able to unbuckle and then his parachute kind of deployed by itself. But I mean, that's pretty hardcore. I guess if you're a test pilot, you got to be kind of open to that sort of thing. I mean, talk about doing something dangerous. You know, you're maybe the first person to ever get in this plane and try it, you know? I mean, people are obviously going to be, you know, pretty sure, doing their best to make sure it's safe based on everything they can know, but
yeah,
you never know.
You know what? And maybe it was an early scarring, too, to take us back to childhood.
Yeah.
Mrs. Wigman's class was when...
fourth grade teacher, I want to say?
Yeah, fourth grade teacher.
Yeah.
We watched the space shuttle take off, and that was the one with Sally Ride in it, the school teacher who got to go on the flight.
Oh, yeah. This was Challenger.
Yeah, Challenger. And it exploded. I don't know if that is always plays in the back of my mind, too. Even something as high-tech as NASA, things cannot go right.
You know, what's weird about that is I remember being in the classroom and the principal, I'm blanking on her name.
No, wasn't it Mr. C at that point?
No, it was Sister Mark, right?
Yeah.
She came into the classroom and, like, they had, like, one of these ancient TVs. With like the wood paneling on it. They had it on a cart in the classroom and it must've had an antenna or something on it because she turned it on and like was put the news on and we were all like, what the heck is happening? Like, we're not used to like anybody turning on the television in the classroom. But, this was when that happened and they were,
yeah, we watched it happen, which was kind of wild. Like, that's one of those things that, you know, you always say that you remember where big things happen. There's about two things that I have that are big in that department, and that's one of them.
Yeah.
I distinctly remember that that launch. And I don't know if that plays in the back of my head in this decision, if I'd have the money. What do you think? Would you do it if you, you know, in imaginary land where you have the $250K to just toss around?
It would be really tempting, because that just would be really neat to be able to, like, actually say that you went into space. And not only that, but, I mean, to actually experience it and, like, see it with your own eyes, you know?
Right. A lot of people do seem to... A lot of the astronauts have, like, a different vibe for, after they come out of that.
Yeah.
And that's got to be a pretty wild experience to be out there. I can certainly understand. You would definitely see the smallness of the planet. Like, and again, just in a regular flight, you kind of see how small things are. Because you can't really make out a whole lot when you're up that high.
Right. Yeah. And then this would be much more so. Like, you'd almost be able to see the planet as a whole, almost.
Right.
I guess you probably wouldn't go that far away, but you'd be able to see the curve of the Earth for sure, and I don't know. It would just be definitely a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. You would not be doing that all that often. I wouldn't think.
Now, the problem I see with this is that you're coming back down to the same spot where you took off from. Like, if they were actually able to do this and, like, turn it into a real, like, option for people to travel, like, it seems like you'd be able to go so much faster than you would if you could do it in orbit. You know what I mean? Like, if you could go up into orbit and then, like, land somewhere else on the Earth, like...
Oh.
I would think you'd be able to go to the other side of the planet in a matter of minutes, right?
Yeah, if they could figure it out, I would imagine that maybe that is the new flight, is getting up into short orbit.
Right.
And using, like, the jet streams to go... Well, when would that be... I mean, I guess that would only be useful for, like, a handful of places. Like, they would definitely have to be points that are stationed pretty far apart.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't think we'd want to do this from here to, oh, say, Pittsburgh for a flight. Like, that's less than an hour now.
Right. Or even, like, you know, Florida, I would say. Or, you know, anywhere in the U.S. probably. But if you could, you know, if you were someone who traveled... You know, between here and Asia, that would be a pretty cool option, I would think.
Yeah, that would be kind of badass.
Yeah. So I was a little bit disappointed that his plans weren't to do that right away, but I guess that makes sense. you want to try to make sure things are working okay first. You know,
right?
Just getting up there is maybe enough for people right now. You don't want to have to worry about opening another airport somewhere else. Across the world.
Yeah,
know.
People aren't quite ready to live on the moon.
if only, though.
Oh, man.
So,
yeah, it would be pretty interesting. Like, I guess it would be tempting for me, but I still don't think I could do it.
You know, what else might be tempting for some people is you know, you're with your best girl, you're out and about, you see the back of an ambulance open, and you decide you are going to take the opportunity to make out in there.
Yeah. You could. That is some risk-taking. It is a different type of risk-taking?
Sure.
I'm not quite sure what comes over you to think that this is a good idea, and or the fact that you're going to have a whole lot of time to do this.
By the way, we're not just speaking, you know...
from experience.
Right. Well, this isn't a hypothetical scenario either.
No. A youth in England perpetrated this act with his woman...
Yeah.
He is the only one in the news because he got into a fight. He attacked the paramedic who interrupted their session.
Yeah, I think that they actually quote him here. Okay. I should just read from the article.
Yes, you should.
The incident began when paramedics responded to the home of a 92-year-old man suffering from chest pains. So that's kind of a serious problem, right?
Yeah.
The crew members left open the back doors of the ambulance when they went to retrieve him. You can tell this is in England because they're retrieving him. When they returned, they found Hargreaves, this is the guy's name, and a female companion making out on a stretcher, the Lincolnshire Echo reports. Now, I don't know what your reaction would be upon seeing the paramedics return to the ambulance before, you know, in mid-coitus. Wait, no, I don't think they're actually... Oh, I don't know. But anyway, this guy yells, "What's your problem? We are just trying to have sex."
Which I just think is an absolute gem of a line.
Right.
Because not only is this gentleman not surprised, he actually is offended by the fact that a paramedic is trying to use his own ambulance.
You know what? I think I would be more like, okay, my bad, you know, or, you know, trying to make a hasty retreat, I would think. Because some part of me would know that this was wrong, I think.
I certainly understand the whim of trying to accomplish this, as, you know, every now and again I've had a wild hair up my ass and tried to do things in inappropriate locations.
Well, you know, he also admitted to robbing a crate of beer from a store on the same day, so if he, he may have drank in a part... Now, what is a crate of beer? Is that what we call a case, I guess?
Yeah. All right.
So, I would guess that...
Silly limeys.
So, he was probably feeling pretty good. I don't imagine he was just stole the beer to...
To hold on to it for later.
Right. He probably was imbibing some that day, yeah.
They did not mention... it was kind of interesting that they had to have another unit, ambulance unit, called out to treat the assaulted paramedic.
It reminds me of that scene. I don't know if you've seen it. It was Return of the Living Dead, I want to say it was called. With the it took place in Louisville, Kentucky, I remember. But they...
Is that the one with Ving Rhames?
No, you're thinking of Dawn of the Dead, I think.
Oh,
The 2004 remake of the original Dawn of the Dead?
Yes.
This one was Return of the Living Dead, I want to say, which was somebody who worked with Romero on Night of the Living Dead, but ended up kind of parting ways with him, and they kind of both split the... they both were allowed to make zombie movies, I guess, in that way.
Gotcha.
So he made Return of the Living Dead as almost a sort of semi sequel, I guess, but not really. I don't know. Anyway, it's almost more of a comedy in some scenes, but it is kind of creepy in others. But there is one scene where they called out, an ambulance came out to the scene of where the zombies were beginning to kind of wake up. And in this movie, it was from some chemical that, was like, locked away in a barrel that they accidentally opened that kind of turns people into zombies.
Oh, okay.
An ambulance came out to the scene, and when they opened the door to come out, like, zombies just rushed, like, swarmed them immediately and, like, just started eating them. And then the radio inside the ambulance was like, you know, come in, like, what's your situation or something? And one of the zombies grabs the receiver and clicks the radio on and says, "Send more paramedics." So it's something along those lines.
Oh, that is outstanding. That is outstanding.
Because this guy punched paramedic Michael Newman three times in the face and spat blood and saliva on him. The female suspect also bit the hand of technician William Heron, according to court testimony. So, they're kind of burying the lead. This guy can spit blood. I don't know how he did that.
Yeah, I was interested in that topic, too. I was like, huh? Like, did the paramedic get some shots off and they're not mentioning it?
I mean, was he spitting the paramedic's blood back at him?
That's just disgusting. I mean,
and if so, that's not. I have to say that's not intentional, right? I mean, spitting by itself is like assault. I want to say, like, if you spit on someone, like, they could call the police after you.
Yeah.
So,
that's just gross.
I don't think, no, that's not cool. You know, you may have been with this guy up to this point. You may have been, you know, okay, I can understand.
I can understand punching a paramedic in the face three times.
Sure. Well, first of all, you can understand, you know, wanting to have sex in the back of an ambulance. And, you know, so what? They've got a 92-year-old with chest pains. you've got business to attend to of your own, you know?
Yeah.
But when it comes to the point...
Blue balls, almost as bad as chest pains.
Nobody wants to have blue balls. But then... He had to take it to that extra level to spit saliva and blood on a paramedic, and that's just not cool.
Right? Yeah, I was interested that they did not apprehend the woman.
Yeah, I wonder if she might have been a minor, probably.
She did beat a hasty retreat after biting the gentleman.
Yeah,
I guess she's a good enough girl that he's not ratting her out right now.
Well, yeah. And it is heartening to hear that they were able to contact police with a panic button on their radios and then call another ambulance to come take the elderly man to the hospital, who didn't suffer any ill effects from the delay, according to the article.
Yeah, well, that was good news, too.
Yeah. So,
granted, if you're at 92, you're just pressing your luck anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't, you know, I guess he's going to probably go sooner rather than later, but in the grand scheme of things, it would just be a shame if this is what caused him to, like...
Yeah, that would be a dick move.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem
quite
right.
In more ways than one.
Oh, nicely done, Kevin. But I guess if we're going to keep things in the merry land of Ing,
wow.
Yeah, I'm talking about England. We're going to...
Wow. Yep, smooth as the baby's bottom.
We're going to take a little detour to Cheshire.
Cheshire,
is that how you say it?
Yep, like the cat.
It's in the small English village of Williston. I'm probably saying that wrong. It hosts a you may not know the name Williston, but they
well, you should, damn it.
Yeah, now you will, because they host a yearly competition known as the World Worm Charming Championships.
Yes.
So this one caught my eye.
It is kind of wacky. It has been going on for quite a while at this point.
Since 1980.
Yes.
So before the original Ghostbusters, if just a callback to our last episode there.
Yeah. One might be able to deem it that we were 4 years old when they started doing this championship.
Wow, that's pretty old. Pretty long, yeah.
Yeah.
So, what is worm charming, you might say?
I do believe that's a good question for us to answer.
Yeah. Well, it's known alternately as fiddling, charming, or grunting. The practice of coaxing earthworms from the wet dirt. Which, it makes you wonder, I guess this is particularly poignant this week. We've been having a lot of rain here in the Opa region. Consequently, there's been a lot of worms that you might see out there on the sidewalk or in the parking lot.
Yeah, we have had to do no charming.
Yeah.
None whatsoever.
So,
and I thought England was kind of a rainy place.
Right.
So I don't quite understand why they need to be charming worms.
That's kind of what I'm getting to here.
Was I cutting to the chase too quickly?
No, it's fine, because...
Am I just blowing everything up?
Okay, so this is usually done as a method for collecting bait for fishing. Right.
Which does that does make sense. And I guess I do wonder if people who sell bait participate in this particular activity.
You know, it's interesting because I don't know. I forget what the show was called at this point. But there was a show on Netflix that I started watching where it was following people who lived off the land. And some of the people were – it was interesting. Like they would go out and find wood burrs that were like strange growths on trees. But they were worth money to people as like veneers because they're interesting looking. People went out into the woods looking for wild ginseng because like apparently it's like worth a lot of money. Mushroom hunters, but also wormers, which I hadn't heard of before. But these guys were up in Massachusetts and they would go out into like the tidal flats, I guess you want to say.
Okay.
Where it's like all...
Yeah, it's just muddy.
Yeah, muddy. And
the water's receding.
They have to, like, you know, hurry up and do their deal before the tide comes in because it gets flooded again. But they go out there with these special, like, you know, implements, and they're, like, digging through the mud looking for worms. But I did not see them in the show try to charm any worms, which...
no charming, just scooping.
Just like raking, really, I guess, is what they were doing. And then looking for the worms and putting them in there into buckets. I think they got like 50 cents a worm. So it doesn't seem like that's...
That's a decent chunk.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how many worms you're going to find. I guess it depends on how charming you are with the worms. But...
yeah, we had the charming one just walk through the OPA facilities.
That's true.
It's the Stunt Granny Studios.
She made a very short appearance this week, but, you know, we still appreciate it. So they did not do any overt worm charming that I could see on that show.
Gotcha.
But, because they were what was it? The clammers, I want to say? Like the people who were getting clams?
Yeah. And people that farm gooey ducks pretty much do something similar to that.
Okay, but like on this show, there's people who hunted the clams, but they had like these flat bottom boats that could go on like, I guess they were like fan boats. Yeah, that was like a fan boat. So it could go in like no water.
Right.
But them and the wormers were like sharks and jets from West Side Story. Like they just hated each other. Like they accidentally sat down at the same like roadside stand to get lunch, and like they ended up fighting with each other.
Oh, I had no idea that it was that serious.
Yeah. Because
the wormers and the clammers,
right. This was something that I did. This was a conflict that I had no idea about, but, they were even saying that the clammers would come by with their boats and go, and the vibrations would like drive the worms underground so that they couldn't, get their worms. And then the clammers would say that the wormers were destroying the environment or something. I don't know. But that would seem to almost fly in the face of this whole idea of this charming competition, because they take pulls, I guess, it seems like.
Right.
And kind of like hit them to make noise to get the worms to come up out of the ground.
It's like a tuning fork almost. Like that's what I seem to get out of how they were doing it. Like you had to strike it just... And maybe that's the problem, is the clamming boats is too loud. You know, like, maybe the sound is too loud, so it drives them under. Maybe you need to get the note just right. Maybe that's part of the key to this. They didn't really get in-depth on how to game plan for your worm charming.
Yeah, I wish there would have been a video that we could have seen to maybe get a little practical advice. although, as I mentioned, we really don't have to worry about that these days. It's,
No, I haven't fished in a really, really long time. I don't really need, worms for any reason. And it's honestly one of the few things that, my dogs don't eat square off the ground. I'm a little surprised by that from time to time.
They don't eat the worms?
Occasionally, this one to my left likes to have sun-dried worms.
kind of crunchy, I would say. Yeah,
yeah. She doesn't like them wet and soggy. She likes the sun-dried variety.
Hmm.
Guess there's something about the sun-drying process that that she enjoys.
Yeah, it would probably make, I mean, they would be really slimy, I would think, so that'd probably be a problem.
Yeah, and like you said, they're very crunchy by the time she gets to them.
Yeah.
Sounds more like a chip at that juncture.
Or like, you know, where you can get like the dehydrated bananas, chips or something like that.
Oh.
Along those lines.
Right.
Yeah, I think it probably intensifies the flavor too. Maybe makes it a little saltier. I don't know. sounds kind of good, actually. But, yeah, there's some really big worms out there, so I don't think we have to worry about calling them. Just walking through the parking lot to get here was pretty intense with the worms. I feel a little bad for them, though, when I see them laying out there. Like, you know, apparently they can drown if it's the ground gets too wet, so that's why they come up when it's raining.
Oh, okay.
But then, if they find their way onto the sidewalk or a parking lot, like they can't see, so they don't know where they're going, so they can just kind of get stuck there, I guess.
Yeah, they're stupid.
Well, if you didn't have eyes, how smart would you be,
Kevin? Well, I would use my bat detector helmet.
There you go.
My eco locator.
Yeah, you know what?
To figure things out. I suggest that the worms start clicking with their tongue.
Well, I don't think they have tongues, but...
to start eco-locating.
We could maybe come up with a worm-sized version of that helmet, I think. You know, I would stay tuned.
Yeah, maybe
Kickstarter is going to be launching here pretty
maybe
soon.
Maybe we'll just give the worms eyes. We'll just force an evolution for them to have eyes. We're going to genetically modify worms to be better.
That's right. They're
going to be like Earthworm Jim.
They're
going to have eyes and legs.
We need worms, right? They have an important job
to
do.
Dive head first into the ground.
They break down matter. They enrich the soil. We need to give them, you know, an even chance here. through science, I say. So look forward to a Kickstarter worm augmentation coming
augmentation.
Soon.
Yeah, that'll be it.
Well, speaking of that'll be it, I think we're closing in here on the end of our program. I don't know if we had anything else to say about the worms.
No, but I figured we could maybe run a little late if we wanted to do the last topic that had been on the docket.
Oh, which one was that now?
Twin Peaks.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we need to get to this.
Yeah, we have talked about Twin Peaks possibly coming back and our love of it previously.
Sure, but we're both fans. We've been on record saying this.
Yeah, now the interesting thing, when I read the article that you sent to me today, it was kind of funny that Showtime still has the rights to Twin Peaks.
That's
it
right.
Would appear. But David Lynch is, at this juncture, not involved.
Yeah. It seems like he said that he's dropping out from the project because they weren't able to come to an agreement over the budget. So I don't know if that was, like, his what he's getting paid or what they're willing to pay for the show to get it made, I guess.
Right. And, the interesting thing, and maybe they were just covering their own asses, but Showtime said that they thought that things were going in the right direction.
And they were surprised that he was dropping out, yeah.
Right. So they might be doing a little covering in that juncture. Only those parties know.
Or he could be, you know, just doing a little hard bargaining here to try to get them to move on their position. You know, it's possible.
Well, he definitely got some support for his position by pretty much all of the cast.
Right.
From the original Twin Peaks.
Except for Kyle MacLachlan, I believe. I don't think I saw him in the video.
Yeah, I don't think Kyle MacLachlan was in there.
because he's probably signed on for regardless, I would say. But yeah, they all the cast, it looked like they basically were recording on their phones doing selfie videos, but basically answering the question, what would Twin Peaks be without David Lynch, in their own words. And
yeah, they just did a bunch of what are they called? What are the comparisons normally called when you do that?
A simile?
Simile, yes.
There you go.
Yeah, they all had their different similes.
I liked, you know, Twin Peaks without David Lynch would be like a hole without a donut. I think that's pretty good.
You know, because when I read the initial article, I'm like, okay, have someone else do it then. Like, I felt like I was just like...
I mean, they could do it without somebody else, I think. And I probably wouldn't be... I mean, it would not be the best situation. But the way the original Twin Peaks went was not really the best situation either. I mean...
Right. Because that was the one thing I remember talking about it the last time we did. Was just how bad the ending was.
Yeah.
And the ABC... And that was one thing that the article mentioned that I'm not sure I read about was that... ABC forced them to reveal who the murderer was, and that kind of jacked the show up completely. Like, I mean, that was part of the mystery. You wanted that to keep on going.
Yeah, I think that, you know, in contrast, the Showtime series they're talking about would have, you know, like a definite end to it.
Well, so, yeah, and it was still going to continue this arc. It wasn't going to be a reboot.
It was going to be 25 years later.
Right.
Yeah. Which I think they actually referred to in the original Twin Peaks.
Correct.
It was something like, see you in 25 years or something like that.
Yeah. Which is why they were going to do it now.
Yeah. Which makes a lot of sense. So, in a way, I think that that's, you know, having it be kind of a limited series is probably going to work in its favor to have David Lynch be the director. Because I feel like he's better at that versus, you know, running a show that's going to be on for, you know, multiple seasons.
Well, and they were short seasons to begin with. That was one thing that I watched it in hindsight more than I watched it the initial run.
Yeah, I think we were a little too young to watch it the first time around.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, I mean, he was kind of had a short season before the short season's cool. And, I mean, a lot of shows now, at least what a lot of the more acclaimed shows are getting these short, you know, 8, 10, you know, maybe 12 episode seasons, depending upon really what they want almost more than what the network wants.
Yeah.
And I guess I thought somebody, because I looked through David Lynch's list of movies, and I was just like, what else of his did I see? Because they were talking, and I do believe it seems to be the case that they're like just diehard David Lynch fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Twin Peaks, but I'm not sure I'm a diehard.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I know of Mulholland Drive and I know Lost Highway, and I'm pretty sure I've seen parts of both, but I haven't really seen both of them either. So, yeah, I'm not that familiar with them outside of Twin Peaks.
Yeah. I know I've seen Mulholland Drive, parts of Blue Velvet. Maybe I've seen that whole movie.
Oh. But,
yeah, I probably should. And I've seen Lost Highway for sure. Parts of Eraserhead. I don't know if I saw that whole movie or not. But, yeah. I mean, just from Twin Peaks alone, like, I guess that's specifically what we're talking about here. He's a very, well, even beyond Twin Peaks, his work is very dreamlike, I would say. Like, it doesn't necessarily make sense in the traditional sense.
Yeah,
I guess.
It's not, one might say, trippy.
Well, I just realized, speaking of worms, he also directed the original adaptation of Dune, which had some pretty big worms in it.
Yeah.
Just about the size that we've seen outside these days.
My favorite worm movie is still Tremors.
Oh, yeah. Now, that you know what? I wonder, though, now that I'm thinking about it, do you think we could, that could be like the end game eventually if we succeed with our worm augmentation project? Are we going to have some kind of Tremor situation on our hands?
As long as we have Kevin Bacon around to save us, we'll be okay.
You're right. And I think he's still, yeah, he's with us still. He's got that show, The Following. Yeah, so he's going to be there to take care of us.
If he can take down a serial killer, I think he can still take down a giant worm.
Yeah, there's the serial, how do you say that?
Cereal?
Serial killers. They're not joking around. Yeah, so we're going to be okay. But yeah, so the video is pretty cool. I thought it was just cool just to see like the actors as they are today and it kind of like let you imagine a little bit of how the show would look like, I guess, if they were going to start over again.
And I did think that that's kind of interesting. The couple of characters that had interesting speech patterns used them in their little videos.
Yeah.
Because I would imagine that all of those two people in particular don't talk like that on a regular basis.
Yeah, and especially, I forget.
Because there are two in particular that stick out to me.
Was the character's name Red, I want to say? The one who had the red hair and the eye patch, the guy's wife. But she was, like, pretty nutty. But her obsession was to have, like, perfectly quiet curtain runners. So, like, you could open and close the curtain without making any noise at all.
Oh, jeez, I don't remember that.
So, like, she had, like, you know, cotton balls with oil, I think, is what she finally settled on to put up there so that they wouldn't make any noise. But, yeah, hers was pretty funny because she had her eye patch on and also her hair was done in the exact same way. So I feel like that's probably not the way she looks normally.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Yeah, and the way those people feel about David Lynch basically made me go, okay, it's a bad plan to have someone else do this. I feel like somebody else could make something similar. I'm not sure who exactly. But I can't say I really thought about the idea.
Yeah, it would be... if it wasn't somebody with like a strong vision like that, it would be strange. And it would also be strange to have somebody new come in. I guess it's happened. I'm trying to think of when this sort of thing might have happened before. But, cause he also wrote, on the show, I want to say.
Yeah, he did both.
So like to have a new writer kind of take over.
Cause him and another, guy, I believe is Mark Hunt or something like that.
Or Frost, maybe Mark Frost.
Yeah. I'm pulling it up here.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I said, I was kind of with you almost a little bit, but then it did make me think to see these all the actors kind of stand by him. That's got to feel good for him, I would say, to see everybody supporting him like that. So I'm still hopeful he'll come around. I mean, who knows what's going to happen, but
yeah,
I'll still want to see it. I think.
Yeah, Mark Frost. You were right.
Mark Frost. All right, score for me. But I have a feeling Showtime's going to try to do it either way, but we'll see, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have Showtime. I will find some means to watch this if it does come about. But of course, I'm kind of terrible at that anyway. I have not watched Arrested Development, despite the fact that I was probably one of the multitude of people wanting it to come back. Yeah, although I could watch it since you have granted me access to it.
That's true, and you still have not. But
yep. My fault and my fault alone.
Yeah, I mean, some people didn't like the fourth season as much. And it was a little different because they didn't have all the cast together at the same time. So, like, everybody was kind of filming their own episodes at different times.
Oh, okay.
And, like, some of the people would be in it, but not everybody at once. And they would, like, the whole, like, they would there's, like, a lot of, like, flashing back to see like what other people were doing at the same time that something else was happening. And
oh,
so it was like kind of a lot to keep track of, but I liked it. It did feel different than the other ones, though.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But it was still funny.
So, but then again, that is the same writer and director.
Yeah, so you should still check it out, is what I'm saying.
And I do, the only thing I think of in recent history, and I should have thought of it this way, was Community. When they gave that away from Mark Harmon, or Dan Harmon, that season was just atrocious.
Yeah, things went downhill there.
Quickly. And then when he came back, it wasn't maybe as good as it had originally been, but it was still much better than the previous season. And I still haven't watched that on Yahoo yet.
Did that start on Yahoo?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. All right. That's good to know.
Yep.
Got to check that one out.
one last thing to address before we get out of here.
Mm.
You kindly brought some Clown Shoes beer. It was the undead. What the hell was that?
Sounds like Undead Party Crasher.
Yeah, Undead Party Crasher.
But I forget what the type was.
And it was an American Imperial Stout.
Yeah.
And it is quite tasty.
Yeah, it was definitely on the darker side. But that's what you're going to expect, I would think.
Yeah, if you're getting a stout, you hit darker side. And as usual, they have outstanding artwork on their bottles.
Oh, yeah.
And that is something that is always worth looking into, or just taking a look. I love, they have one that's called Tramp Stamp. there's another one that's called Muffin Top.
Yeah, it's kind of like a pulpy type style, I guess I would say, is their artwork.
Yeah, it's kind of
mixed with like comic a book. Comic. Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's like a little bit of an edge to it. I think like it's not like your Silver Age comics or something.
No, not even a little bit.
Yeah, so pretty cool stuff.
Okie doke. For at Stunt Granny, at DeFrango 11, at Gozer 33. This is Opa. 40. We made it, Ken. 40.
All right.
We almost have a year's worth of shows. 12 more to go.
Pretty sweet. All right, everybody, have a great week.